Any reflections on your experience this morning or yesterday after? Can you hear me okay? After going home?
Well, I shared yesterday in the final discussion that, you know, normally I think have to sit and meditate in order to settle. But with the whole program yesterday, I found, you know, it was very settled. So that it was a nice revelation that it doesn't just have to be on the cushion or chair. That combination of walks and talks and just the whole day was a settling process.
Thank you, David. That's great. And in the evening, did you feel that there was some continuity?
Well, I certainly avoided the habitual routine in the evening. No talking to anyone, no distractions. I read a little bit before bed, that was it. But just try to keep it going now.
Nice. Louise?
I really appreciated the story that you told yesterday about, you know, the Buddha seeing his previous lives, which, you know, I've heard the story before, but just the way, you know, how the name, the pleasure, the pain, and then repeating the name, the pleasure, the pain, and continuing over and over and over, and just hearing it in that story form, it just kind of clicked for me. Yeah, why are we clinging to pleasure? Why are we, you know, having aversion to pain? Because this is just the way it is, over and over and over. That's the content of life. And this morning in the meditation, I just felt like that really came together. That sort of the pleasure, the pain, right? How they are so interconnected, or the context and the present moment experience, how they connect. And yeah, that was a really, really profound teaching for me.
The wandering on through samsara, driven by clinging, driven by grasping. And I was on my way here, I was thinking about how I spoke about we can actually choose a framework for how we live our lives. And for many people, it's the framework of accomplishment, whatever that means. Others, it's experience, accumulating experience. But really, our framework is growing wisdom. You know, that's our path of practice, is to grow wisdom, to free ourselves from clinging. And it's, you know, mindfulness as expressed throughout our lives in the different things we do. This non-clinging, this willingness to learn and to see where we do get caught. Yeah, thank you. There are stories, amazing stories, told. In fact, I think there are a couple of volumes, and you may have seen them, of books which are children's remembering of previous lives, accounts from mostly from Sri Lanka. Children who at the age of three or four, say to their parents, "I was here before." And actually, you know, the parents take them to the village they describe, and that's my house, and that's where I lived, and that's where, you know, I fell into the river. And in fact, even in my own life, I've met a woman whose daughter, who said something very similar. And when the daughter saw, like the daughter said something like, and then I died. And the mother said, really? And the mother's expression, you know, of like wondering and astonishment and concern. And the daughter said, but don't worry, because then now I'm here with you. So this understanding of rebirth isn't very common in our culture. But in Asian cultures and in Buddhist cultures, it's very much understood. And for a number of years, I think, our friends Brock and June hosted a young Cambodian man who was a musician and had come to Victoria to study music. He was an opera singer. Remarkable. But in his family, there was just a common, oh yeah, my great uncle is my uncle. Like my great uncle died and was reborn, you know, and that's my uncle. And my cousin, yeah, that's my other cousin who died. And they just, this kind of amazing way in which they see the network of relationship in terms of the births and rebirths of people whose mind streams choose to be reborn in family members. So just, it's another way of framing it. But in our own lives, we can see birth in terms of the roles and identities we assume. And then, you know, maybe one role comes to an end and then another role. So there's a way in which there is a cycling and a development of different qualities through those experiences. Yeah. Any other reflections you'd like to share this morning? Yes, Betty. Yes, and if you read Sayada Upandita, one of Steve Armstrong's teachers, very strict Burmese monk, his language would be much more stark. He probably would not agree that appreciative warmth is helpful, because in his framework, you need to cut attachments. And he says, actually, balanced emotion toward all living beings. So he doesn't encourage any kind of affection, really. And yet, we're human beings, you know. We're mammals. We need affection. So it's interesting to think about how terminology can be off-putting or can open up a new way of seeing. And for me, I think appreciation and warmth doesn't necessarily have to lead to attachment. It's like we have a sunny day. Let's enjoy it. And tomorrow, likelihood is it will change. So there's I think this way in which approaching our lives with that warmth of interest actually helps us to recognize that things arise and pass away. Thank you. Jill.
So it's worthwhile, I'm feeling, to be hearing that and in a way that is calm and normal, part of the cycle. Because I don't think I'm alone in fearing death and old age. And the sense I'm receiving is
that's beautiful, thank you. And you named something that is universal and actually it is one of those great paradoxes that we go blithely through our lives and we have family members who die and even friends who die and dear ones who go, but we don't actually think it's going to happen to us. Yeah.
Stephen Jenkinson says, we know everyone else is going to die, we just don't know we're going to die.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think to make friends with that truth at whatever age we're at is so important. And I think about how we can actually take in the metaphor of the seasons and the trees and the world around us. Oh, I'm too a part of these cycles. And when my dad was in the last days of his life, my cousin brought my uncle, my dad's brother, to see him. And he actually took a short little video of these two men, two brothers in their late 80s, talking. And they were acknowledging to each other, it's okay to let go. It's okay to make room for others who are coming up. And just amazing, actually, that my cousin just stood back in the corner of the room and shot this short little dialogue. And 2 days later, my dad died. 3 days later, my uncle died. I mean, 3 weeks later. Yeah. So this, and then even visiting my father and him saying to me, why, oh, why did I have to grow old? You know, it's so poignant, you know? And this, you know, blindness to the truth that we all age. And I think that this is an amazing practice of equanimity, is to, you know, look in the mirror and meet, you know, the changing form that greets us in the morning. And, you know, subtle changes. And if, imagine if we didn't look in the mirror for a year. And then, oh my gosh, who's that? So it's tender. It's a very tender place. And I think that you know, to express it in some way can be very beautiful if we're given to writing poetry or doing art. I knew a woman in the Comox Valley who decided that she would make a mandala, just a like a Tibetan style circular painting. She would do one every day for a year. And she was expressing the temporary nature of her own creative life and beginning to let go in doing so. So, and I'll tell a story later this afternoon in the talk about that, but there's a way in which our wisdom, our growing wisdom, as we make friends with aging, is something to share, you know, in whatever way we can. Yeah. So, thank you, Jill. Well, let's go on to walking. And if anyone would like to meet, I will just, I'll be upstairs going through my notes. And you're welcome to join me. I'll be upstairs if you want to come and speak about your practice. So let's enjoy a walking period now until, I believe, 10:45. Yes. So thank you for your reflections.